Welcome to The Point. I'm Sean Corcoran. Joining me in the studio is Dr. Julie Sieben, a chiropractor, personal trainer, and fitness instructor who's written a book called 6 Weeks to Love Running, How to Have a Love Affair with Running. Welcome to The Point, Dr. Sieben.
Thank you for having me, Sean.
Oh, it's our pleasure. And I want to invite people to participate in the conversation today. If they have a question or a comment, they can give us a call. If you have something to say about running, you'd like to start running, any questions in that area, 866-999-4626, 866-999-4626, or you can email us thepoint@capeandislands.org. So I want to get to your running plan and advice for people ready to strap on their sneakers and hit the road. But first, Dr. Sieben, tell us a little bit about your background. You live on the Cape. Do you practice here? What's
yep.
the situation?
I do. I live in Orleans on the Cape. I have a small practice in Chatham at the Chatham Health Club. And I also have a practice in Plymouth, Massachusetts at a gym called Live Life Believe. So I'm in both places.
And you have an athletic background?
Yeah, I do. My undergraduate degree is in exercise science from UMass Boston. I've always been an athlete. I was a gymnast when I was a teenager, and that's actually how I herniated two discs in my spine when I was 13. So that was the end of my gymnastics career. And the story sort of goes that I was also a musician, and I went on to go to Berklee College of Music. But because of my back problems, it was very difficult for me to sit and play the piano. Mm-hmm. That's what I play, to play scales. I had a very limited amount of time before my back was too bad to sit and play. So I ended up withdrawing from Berklee and floating around a little bit, but ultimately graduating from UMass Boston with an exercise degree, because what I found helped my back the most was exercise, was being fit and practicing yoga. So I worked as a fitness professional for 10, 12 years and decided to go back to school to become a chiropractor. So I went to New York Chiropractic College. That's where I got my degree there. So now I sort of integrate my background in fitness and wellness, and of course my experience with back pain.
How did you find your way to running?
I always hated running.
So, oh, we've heard that before.
Yes, I always hated running. I played soccer after gymnastics, and I hated running track, and we had to do the suicides, and I didn't like it. But like many people, I always wanted to run. It seemed alluring to me. There's that just group of people who talk about the endorphins and really love running. And I wanted to learn how to love running. So that came from soccer in high school, and then in college when I was working on my degree in exercise science, there was some people who ran, and what I just kind of found what worked for me as far as running, proper pacing, proper breathing, and that's what wasn't the case when I was playing soccer. It was usually too fast for me at a tempo that didn't work, and that's why I hated it. And I think a lot of people, that's why they don't like it, because they haven't found the style of running or the training program that works for them.
I think people also are concerned about injuries they may have or areas of their body that they think are a little weak. Was your back hurt when you ran, or it didn't affect your back?
Yeah, my back was okay running. Wasn't a bother. You know, running, when you run, it's 6 times your body weight on one leg. Although I love running and I think it's appropriate for a lot of people, it's not appropriate for everybody. So if someone comes in with a history of a lot of knee problems, running may or may not be good for them. But I think what happens is that people don't start with a proper progression. And I talk about that in the book. You can't not run and then start running 1 or 2 miles and expect to do that healthfully. You have to gradually increase the strength of your bones, your ligaments, your tendons, your muscle. You have to honor that running is high impact. It's stressful on the body. So you have to, you have to be smart about starting a running program.
What about the knees? You mentioned the knees. Some people are worried about starting, even if they don't have a knee problem, that it will wear down their knees in some way. I actually had a physician tell me, oh, don't run. I was overweight. He wanted me to get exercise, but don't run. And that was the thing I loved.
I believe that to be a myth. There's no research, and I've looked into this, that really supports running causes osteoarthritis of the knees. There isn't any. If you take an x-ray of somebody's knees after the age of 40, you're going to see some degenerative changes. It is what it is. Whether you're running or you're not, you'll see that. And there really is no literature that supports that. I certainly think some people's body types may or may not, it might not work for them, and you have to know that about yourself. But there's nothing about running in particular that causes arthritis.
My guest today is Dr. Julie Sieben, a Cape Cod chiropractor and athletic trainer who's written a book, 6 Weeks to Love Running, and we welcome your questions and comments. You can give us a call, 866-999-4626, or email thepoint@capeandislands.org. So the book is geared towards people who are just beginning to run. People who've never run before could pick this book up and have most all of the information they need about everything from stretching to injuries to pacing. So how did this book kind of come about?
Dan says running has helped his knees. I agree, Dan. The book came about, well, I was looking for a book to help me enjoy running and become a better runner. And I found that a lot of the books out there would say things like, start with an easy mile. And I thought, gee, that seems like a lot. A mile is a lot to start with. So this was maybe 10 or 12 years ago. And I was working as a personal trainer and trying to enjoy running myself and learning more about running and talking to clients who wanted to start running. So I actually started a program called 6 Weeks to Love Running, where I took a group of people, usually 6 to 10, usually women, and we met at a park. And every week I'd give them a handout, which became sort of the skeleton of this book. We'd meet together and do sort of a walk-run program. We'd do some stretches. I'd give them homework. And the homework was their walk-run program throughout the week, in addition to a strength and stretch program. What runners often do is only run. Mm-hmm. You can't do only one thing, anything. It's not healthy for you. If you only do yoga, if you only do this, if you only do that, that's how we build muscular imbalances, and that leads to injury. I think runners tend to get into this only run mentality and become injured, and it's not because it's running. It's because they're only doing one thing. So the program helped people cross train and run smart. So that's how it kind of came to be. And then just over the years, I had always thought, I'd like to make this a book. And eventually I did.
You've decided to divide the book into 4 different parts. Maybe you could talk about that, but there's also lots of places to write things down. It's almost like a journal, you know, list your motivations, list what you think you'll be getting out of running socially and mentally. And then I think the idea is you can go back and look at this when you need those motivations or when you need to remember where you were. Mm-hmm. And they say that for runners, you should keep a log of what you're doing each day, what the weather was, in case maybe you need to look back and see when you first felt a nagging injury or something like that.
Yep. I've always been a journaler my whole life. And, you know, there's lots of quotes and studies about the value of writing down your goals and tracking your progress. And I think that really is valuable. So I always wanted a book where you could make journaling part of the progress and part of the process to help keep you motivated, help you stick to your goals. Notice when you had an injury. One of the things I say in the book, what I always do, if I had a really crappy run, I want to know what I ate, you know, what I did or didn't do that may have contributed to that. Or if I had a really great run, you know, what was different about that so I can recreate that. So you think you're going to remember, but you won't. So writing it down is really helpful.
Let's talk a little bit more specifically about one of the training plans. So you said starting off with a mile is too much. Yeah. So give an example. So what might be one day that you have?
So it'd be a walk run, essentially. I forget exactly what it is. I think it's walk 5 minutes, run for 3 or run for 2 and repeat that. So you're out there on the road or wherever you are for 20 minutes or 25 minutes. So you build up cardiorespiratory endurance. You start to work on building the strength of the connective tissue in the extremities. So you're doing that without all the pounding. And I also think there's value to little bite-sized chunks of time. Like you can do anything for 2 minutes. You can do anything for 3 minutes. So I think mentally that's helpful. Then, gosh, I got to go out there for a mile or two. So that's how it kind of progresses throughout the week. So maybe you walk 5 minutes, you run 2 minutes. The second day is a stretch day. Then the third day you run 3 minutes, walk 4 minutes. And it gradually progresses over the course of 6 weeks. When I did the program, our goal was to train for a 5K. We often would run a turkey trot and it was fun.
Sure.
So the goal is to gradually increase your time, running time for 30 minutes.
Does the pace matter when you're just starting?
Yes, it matters a lot. I think what a lot of people do is run too fast when they start off, because maybe the last time you ran was when you were 10 and you used to just run down the street as fast as possible and you didn't care. And I think when people start again, they kind of just remember that pace. Maybe their body remembers that pace. I don't know. But you're not cardiovascularly fit enough to maintain that. And usually it's kind of a horrible experience. So pacing, one of the things I always say to people is run ridiculously slow in the beginning, like a pace that you could maybe even walk really fast at. Now, there are biomechanical advantages of running faster. It's usually better biomechanically on the body. But if you can't do it, you can't do it. You'll never get there. So to start slow is valuable.
What about this idea of good pain and bad pain? If you're just starting out, you might feel some pain. You're going, oh, is that an injury? Should I stop? Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I think there's sort of a saying that if you feel a pain in a joint, it's bad pain. If you feel pain in a muscle, it's good pain. I think that's a good rule of thumb. And I think people will get nervous about the difference between work and pain. I actually remember running with a woman and we were running up a hill and she goes, I really feel this in my thighs. And she was nervous. She was like, is that okay? I was like, yeah, that's normal. But if you're someone who's never exercised, which is sometimes the case, there's confusion about what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. But sharp pain, lingering pain, pain in a joint, you want to keep your eye on.
How about soreness that night or the next day?
Normal.
Totally normal.
Yep. Fine.
Okay. And you tell your readers to have a gentle attitude about running. That's probably a little bit of what you're talking about here. So, but running's really, it's hard, right? I mean, it's hard it's not always easy.
I think that's true. I wouldn't call myself a gifted runner, a natural runner. So I think for me, it's a little harder than someone who might consider themselves a gifted runner. Mm-hmm. But to have this gentle attitude, I think one of the things I talk about in the book, I think goal setting and sticking with it is so important. And sometimes we get so hard on ourselves or we become so dogmatic or so, you know, end result that we get so hard on ourselves, we derail ourselves right off the bat. And then we fail, quote unquote, fail. And we do this over and over. And eventually that sort of destroys our self-efficacy or our inner belief in ourselves over time. So I really think having that gentle approach to oneself is key.
So if you go through the plan, you've made your 6 weeks, you're running maybe, what, 25, 30 minutes at a time. Mm-hmm. Where do you go from there? Do you have to go anywhere from there? Is that enough to keep you fit or to keep you, because a lot of people want to lose weight, to continue to lose weight?
Yeah, I mean, I think the guidelines are to do cardiorespiratory exercise somewhere between 3 to 5 times per week. I think because of the high impact nature of running, 3 to 4 is good, in my opinion. That's good enough. You can do more if your goal is to continue to lose weight. Then you need to start thinking about, of course, diet, nutrition, and strength training. Strength training is really key to building muscle mass, to help you burn calories, to help you lose weight, and to make you a stronger, more efficient, less injured runner.
Very important. Less injured runner. I understand it. I want to thank Dr. Julie Sieben for coming into our Woods Hole studio today. Her book is 6 Weeks to Love Running, How to Have a Love Affair with Running. Dr. Sieben, thank you so much for being here. Folks can find that book on Amazon, local bookstores.
Yep, Barnes & Noble's. And also tonight I'll be speaking at the Falmouth Road Race Expo that opens tonight. So I'm speaking at 6 o'clock. I'm selling my book there and also doing some book signings.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
People can find out more about your book at our website, capeandislands.org, as well. And you also have a website, as you said, 6weekstoloverunning.com. And we're actually going to take a break. When we come back, Bill Higgins of the Cape Cod Times will join us to talk about the Falmouth Road Race,
nice,
which is coming up on Sunday. Yes.
Which you're doing.
and Bill's been covering this for 40 years, and he's run it as though he's an expert as anybody.
Awesome.
So, like I said, Bill's coming up, so stay with us.
Thanks, Sean.
Welcome back to The Point. I'm Sean Corcoran. This weekend, one of the top road races in the world will be held right here in Falmouth. The 7-mile Falmouth Road Race attracts some of the top runners, as well as thousands of people looking to enjoy the festive atmosphere as they run along the water from Woods Hole to Falmouth Heights. And joining me from the Cape Cod Times newsroom is Bill Higgins, the paper's sports editor who's been running and covering and running the race here and there for the past 40 years. 40 years, is that right, Bill?
Morning, Sean. Yep, 40 years.
40
this
years
year for me.
How has the race changed over 40 years?
Well, it's changed quite a bit, I think, in the terms of just the organization and kind of the corporate involvement of the race. The first couple years, 73 and 74, it was really a fun run, with the first year less than 100 runners, second year about 400, and then 75, it really exploded because Frank Shorter, the Olympic gold medalist, ran in the race for the first time, ran against Bill Rogers that year, and Bill was coming off a victory in the Boston Marathon earlier in 75. So that, I think, in terms of just generating a lot of appeal for the average runner, attracted a lot of people. And gradually it just kind of exploded and grew from there. And in the last, 30 years anyway, it's just become this mass fun run, but also a world-class race. And having New Balance involved in the last couple of years as a corporate sponsor and the title sponsor, and prior to that, Cigna and Pilgrim Healthcare and Perrier going back many years, there's just been a lot more infusion of corporate money, which has helped attract a lot of the world-class runners.
So when it first got started, it was essentially a run from one pub to another. So the pub here in Woods Hole, and then out to another pub in Falmouth Heights.
Yeah, it really was. It was celebration of Tommy Leonard's birthday in 1973, and it actually was run on Tommy's birthday. Tommy is credited, and rightly so, as the founder of the race. The story goes that he was watching the 72 Olympic marathon in Munich, Germany. Frank Shorter won that race, and Tommy was a bartender at the Brothers Four in Falmouth Heights, which I don't believe is there anymore. But Tommy was watching the race on the bar while he was tending bar in 1972 and was just captivated by what Frank was doing. An American winning the marathon was unheard of. I don't think there had been an American gold medalist in the marathon since the early 1900s. And Tommy was a Boston marathoner, and Tommy's personality is just such an effervescent one that he kind of shut down the bar and really provided commentary on the race. He was just so excited by what he was watching. And from that, he decided this should be a road race in Falmouth to support the local community and support some of the recreation and school activities and so forth. And from there, he got in touch with John Carroll, the high school track coach, and Rich Sherman, then the town recreation director. And lo and behold, in 73, they ran a road race, and it was on his birthday. And it was a bar-to-bar run from the Captain Kidd in Woods Hole to Brothers Four. And that's why it was the odd distance of 7 miles. That's not typically the distance you would run. You would run 10,000 meters or 6.2 miles or nowadays 5Ks at 3 miles. Or you might run half marathons or something. But it was 7 miles from one bar to the next. And it really was just a fun run. And legendary, party at the Brothers Four in 1973. Johnny Kelly was there. And, of course, there was a few drinks consumed and bologna sandwiches, and it was run on a pouring rain day, from what I've done in my research, and it was just a fun run. But that spirit really still sticks with the race. It really is still a fun run atmosphere.
7 miles, as you said, that's an odd distance. And some of the big names who've won the race, people you mentioned, Alberto Salazar, Frank Shorter, Bill Rogers, and Micah Kogo of Kenya. Then in the women's division, Joan Benoit, Kim Merritt, Greta Waitz, Lynn Jennings, all very famous marathoners, most of them. What happens when marathoners are running 7 miles? How does that field stretch out? Have we had some famous duels over the years that you recall?
Yeah, absolutely. As I said, it is kind of a quirky distance, so you get this mixture of track runners who are maybe more comfortable and proficient at running the 5,000 or the 10,000 meters than their speed runners, whereas you get a marathoner who's more probably a strength runner. So you bring a marathoner down to 7 miles and you bring a 10,000-meter runner up to 7 miles, and you get this odd dichotomy of speed versus strength. And Falmouth's course is kind of quirky also. Those first 3 miles are kind of through rolling hills by Nobska Light and through the woods before you come out onto Surf Drive. So those first 3 miles can, sap a little bit of strength, even from the world-class runners, because of the rolling hills. And the track runners, of course, are used to running on a track. They're not used to running hills, whereas marathoners are used to running roads and hills. So you get this mixture, and it does lend itself to a really competitive race. Typically, the race will hold together until maybe 4 miles, 3.5 to 4 miles. When they come out of the woods and get onto the flats along the beach on Surf Drive, there'll usually be a pretty good collection of 8 to 10 runners together. And then somebody, will put in a surge or make a move and break up the pack a little bit. And then oftentimes in recent years you've had somebody, you know, run away from, you know, the field and win comfortably. But there have been some famous duels, you know, where it'll come down to a sprint. That last hill going into Falmouth Heights is a killer, even for the world-class people, because it's a very steep climb going into the heights and then a little bit of a sprint downhill, you know, to the finish line. So you'll get a lot of you know, nip and tuck finishes, and you'll get some races that just break up, and the winner will, you know, have a 10 to 12 second, you know, lead and coast to the finish.
My guest is Bill Higgins. He's the sports editor at the Cape Cod Times, who's been covering the Falmouth Road Race for the past 40 years, as well as running in the race on occasion. If you have a question or a comment, you can give us a call, 866-999-4626, 866-999-4626, or you can email us, of course, thepoint@capeandislands.org. This year, Bill, on Sunday, the winner of the Boston Marathon, this year's Boston Marathon, will be here. Meb, I mean, he's the biggest name in running.
Yeah, he is right now. It's exciting. Meb Keflezighi has been here in the past. He's had a couple of runner-up finishes in the past. He's certainly a world-class runner, probably more of a marathoner than a 10,000-meter runner or a 7-mile road racer. But his versatility and his longevity in the sport is really pretty remarkable. He's 39 years old now, and you know, he goes back to winning a silver medal in the Olympics in 2004 in Athens. As I said, he's had a couple of runner-up finishes in Falmouth. He's won the New York Marathon. And probably is certainly one of his crowning achievements was winning the Boston Marathon this past April. First time since 1983 that an American man has won Boston. And, of course, with all the emotion of this year's Boston Marathon coming off the bombings 2 years ago, it was really a pretty remarkable performance. From what I've heard, and I have to confirm this in the next couple of days, I think Meb has been on a real whirlwind since April, and rightly so. So I don't know that he's going to be in top physical condition. I think he's been nursing a little bit of a hamstring injury recently. I know he ran in the Beach to Beacon 10K a couple of weeks ago in Maine. That's Joan Benoit Samuelson's race, and I think he finished like 11th or 12th, a respectable finish, but I'd be surprised actually if he was really a contender this week. But that said, you know, he's motivated and he's a world-class athlete, so when you get him on the starting line, you never know what might happen.
And there also, besides the race itself on Sunday, and it's at 9 o'clock on Sunday, and we'll talk about the change in time in a moment or two. But there are events that surround all weekend about the race, and Meb is participating in some of those.
Yes, I think Road Race Weekend really officially kicks off tonight. The expo opens at the high school. Runners can start picking up their numbers tomorrow. There's activities all day long at the expo, all types of clinics and talks and, you know, health seminars and so forth. Saturday is a big day. I think Meb is doing a talk and an autograph session Saturday afternoon. I know Bill Rogers, Joan Benoit Samuelson, and Frank Shorter are also participating on Saturday afternoon in an autograph session and talk. Dave McGilvery, who was the race director and actually pretty remarkable in his own right with all that he's accomplished, both as a runner and a race director.
Yeah, he's amazing. He's the race director for the Boston Marathon as well as Falmouth. He's run across the country a number of times. As the other day, I saw Lance Armstrong was tweeting out about Dave McGilvray, and Dave returned 60 this week. And every time he has a birthday, he runs that many miles. So this week he ran 60 miles that day.
It's astounding.
It is.
I've been good friends with Dave for many years, and what he does both for philanthropy and his organizational skills, I don't know. He must only sleep a couple hours a night because he's just a remarkable person in terms of how he manages, you know, his own life and his own running, and then manages all these events. He did the Beach to Beacon race as a race director a couple of weeks ago, and he often runs these races too. He manages them, organizes them with his team at his company that he has, and then he goes out and runs the race. I know Boston every year, which is a huge undertaking logistically, at the end of the race, after he's done all of his work around 4 in the afternoon, he'll go out and run the race you know, himself with a few friends. And as you said, he ran 60 miles last weekend to celebrate his 60th birthday. So,
what's the purse? How much can people win if they win this race or place in this race?
The first place winners for both the men and the women in the open division will win $10,000 each. The prize purse, I think, is about $90,000 in total. Mm-hmm. They also have prize money for the top American finishers. They have prize money for the wheelchair race. And interestingly, Falmouth this year is celebrating its 40th anniversary of the wheelchair division. They were at one of the races, probably even internationally, at the forefront of welcoming wheelchair races to their sport. As I said, it goes back to 1975, and Bob Hall, who was a Boston wheelchair racer and one of the first in the sport, and back then in the 70s, when we talk about wheelchair racing, they were really racing in wheelchairs as we would, you know, conventionally know them. Now they've become really high-tech, you know, almost racing machines. But Bob Hall did the road race back in the 70s several times, and it's evolved over the years into a nice division in the race.
So will the wheelchair division go off first, like with the Boston Marathon?
Yeah, they've organized this race so well. It's an amazing accomplishment what they do to get 13,000 runners down into Woods Hole and to Falmouth Heights with very little difficulty or issues. But they send the wheelchairs off, and it's probably, I would guess, anywhere from 15 to 25 wheelchair races this year. They'll go off, I think, at 8:40. The elite women's field, in the last couple of years, they've split the men's elite and the women's elite, which gives the women really the stage to themselves. They'll go off at 8:50, so they'll be on the roads by themselves, and the women's race will be highly competitive also. And then the men's elite will go at 9 o'clock, and then... the rest of us slugs will go after that.
I'm one of those slugs. You're one of those slugs. Dan Tridle is one of those slugs.
I shouldn't insult some of the other people. They're very good runners in their own right.
Oh, of course. No. Any runner would laugh.
I'm a slug.
How long does it take for the entire field to get out of Woods Hole?
Oh, gosh. Well, in recent years that I've done it, they've allowed me, fortunately, because of some of my responsibilities, to report on the race to kind of go right in back of the elite field so I can get an early start and kind of get to a late finish and at least get there. But it probably takes at least probably 20, 25 minutes to get everybody off the starting line.
And so why did they move it to 9 o'clock this year? In past years, it's been, I think, 10 o'clock?
It's always been 10 o'clock. And I think the medical community over the years has always felt like you start to get into the heat of the day, and if you start at 10 o'clock and, you know, for the back of the pack runners, and, you know, there's 13,000 or 12,800 runners in the race, and 12,700 of us are probably average runners. And, you know, when you start moving from 10 o'clock to 10:30 to 11 o'clock, maybe even 11:30 for some people who are still out there, the heat of the day can become a concern. Typically, Falmouth over the years has been kind of a hot, humid, you know, sticky day, can be oppressive at times. And the medical community, I think, and rightly so, was always concerned that there would be really health concerns. Some of these runners, you know, maybe aren't as well trained as they could be or should be, and they extend themselves a little bit, so there are health risks. And I think the medical community felt like if they could move it up a little bit sooner, an hour sooner, that might alleviate some concerns over health risks. And also, the community along the race, I think the neighborhoods, it's a congested area, obviously, from Woods Hole to Falmouth Heights. And I think the neighborhoods along the race, while they've been very receptive and supportive over the years, I think getting their neighborhoods, you know, back, you know, to somewhat normal an hour earlier, I think, was advantageous. And so the race committee, you know, is cooperating with all of those concerned.
I was taking a look at some of the information online about the race and seeing some pictures of previous races. I was amazed by how many people are out there lining the course. Most times you go to a road race and you're on your own. It's pretty quiet. You might have people here or there. You know, Boston Marathon is a different thing. But some people have said mm-hmm. this is like a mini Boston Marathon because of the crowds that are out there on the course cheering the runners on.
It very much is. It's an amazing experience. And I've done it both, you know, watching it and covering it and running it. And from Woods Hole, you know, right from the start line there in the drawbridge, that there's people all along the route, all 7 miles, certainly through those wooded areas. After you get by Nobska Light, things thin out a little bit, but there are still people along the roads. There's a little bit of a train bridge or an over bridge there in the woods. There are people standing on that cheering for you. There's people with hoses out there. There are official water stops, of course, along the route, but there are then people who come out with their own water for you. And once you get out of the woods and onto the beach along Surf Drive, and from there all the way to the finish line, both sides of the road are just lined with kids and people, and they're cheering for you. And I mean, it's very supportive when you're back there kind of plodding along like I am, and people are cheering for you and clapping for you. You know, you feel like, well, you'd like to stop and maybe walk a little bit, but you look ahead and, you know, kids are cheering for you. You say, well, you'll run a little bit longer. And it really does kind of lift you up and kind of carry you along. And the finish line at the ball field is just an amazing sight. You know, with the beach and the ball field and that chute as you come down the hill, there's thousands and thousands of people.
Wow.
You know, for a day anyway, or for a few minutes, you feel like, you know, you're a rock star.
And what happens after the race? A lot of events there at the finish in Falmouth Heights?
Yeah, again, as I said, the scene is wonderful. You've got the beach on one side, you've got the ball field on the other. The ball field is kind of the official gathering spot for all the runners and the families and friends and so forth. There's all kinds of food and so forth there for the runners. There's, you know, music. There's an award ceremony after the race. And it's, you know, on a nice sunny Cape Cod, you know, morning, it's a nice place to hang out. So there's all kinds of things going on.
You mentioned that the winner, $10,000 prize for the first place winner. Is that pretty competitive with other major races around the world, or what's
I think
situation?
It's probably on the high side for a non-marathon race. I think this purse is probably more lucrative than it would be at some other races. Marathons, of course, are a little bit different animal, but $10,000 to win a road race, I think, is on the high side. But Falmouth's reputation in the sport is well-earned. When Falmouth started, as I said, world-class probably back in 1975, it was still a sport that was evolving, and Falmouth, I think, was really at the forefront of it. So to win Falmouth, you've won a really significant race on the international scene.
You mentioned that it was a big deal when Bill Rogers first came to the race back in 1974. He won that race in 34 minutes and 16 seconds. And was it Bill Rogers being on the scene that attracted Frank Shorter, who won the following 2 years?
I think there was some of that. When Bill Rogers won in 74, he really wasn't Bill Rogers as we know him now. In fact, it's kind of a funny story. They spelt his name wrong. Because he wasn't really well known at the time. His car was towed in 1974, and he won a warming blender, I think, was his prize, which is one of the funny anecdotes that go back. But in 75, Bill had won the Boston Marathon in April of 75, and I'm not sure, he may have run an American record that year. And Frank Shorter, of course, was an Olympic gold medalist, and he would go on to be a silver medalist the next year, in 1976 at the marathon in Montreal. And so I think there was a little bit of this Boston Billy, they called him. And
yep.
So Tommy Leonard wanted to get Frank Shorter here because of his history with the marathon. And as I said, he was inspired by what he had done in 72. And they came up with a sponsorship for Frank to get him here. I think Labatt's Beer might have even been the sponsorship back then. To get Frank here. And so he was running against the Boston Marathon champion and running against sort of a hometown hero. So I think that sort of spiced it up a little bit. And Frank came and won in 75 and 76 and beat Bill both years. But then Bill won in 77 and 78. So
was Frank around for the 77-78 runs?
I think he was. He may have been here for one of them. I'm not sure if he was here for both of them. But they had a great rivalry and a great duel over the years, and they've become great friends, and they're here again this year. They come back every year, and Frank likes to call himself a citizen runner now. Both Frank and Bill are in their 60s, and they'll come and they'll kind of, you know, they'll race the race, but they're really, you know, kind of back of the pack runners now, and they really enjoy it. And Joan Benoit Samuelson, again, is, you know, I kind of call them the golden oldies. Joan is as competitive and as, you know, she's amazing. She's probably in her mid to late 50s now, but, you know, she will come and she will race this as hard as she can, and she's still, you know, a really, really good runner.
Well, she had a great run. I mean, 76 she won, and then 78 she won, then came back in 81 and 82 and 85. I mean, that
she's
is some
won it six times. I don't think any other woman has won the Open Division six times. And this year, interestingly, and I'm writing about this this weekend, this will be the 30th anniversary of her really historic gold medal marathon victory in 1984 at the Los Angeles Olympics. It was the first year they allowed women to run the marathon, and Joan famously won that race in Los Angeles. So this will be the 30th anniversary of her marathon victory. And again, as I said, she'll be here, you know, Sunday morning, and she'll be part of the festivities all weekend. Amazing woman.
Has there been a definitive book about the Falmouth road race that's been written?
There was a book written last year about kind of the history of road running, and it centered a lot on Falmouth. It wasn't definitively all about Falmouth, but as I said, Falmouth was kind of at the forefront of the road racing movement in this country. But I don't think there has been a definitive book on the whole history of Falmouth. I've had a couple of people express interest, and I've always sort of in the back of my mind thought about, you know, it would be an interesting project to take on.
That's what I was thinking. It might be an interesting project for you, Bill.
It would.
Yeah. All right. Well, I want to thank you, Bill, for joining us. Bill, of course, is the sports editor at the Cape Cod Times, and he joined us from the newsroom at the Times in Hyannis. Thank you, Bill, and good luck on Sunday.
My pleasure. You too.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. What was that?
I'll see you at the finish line.
I'll see you at the finish line. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to step away from the running discussion and move on to a more serious topic, prescription drug abuse among young people. We'll talk about a new documentary about that issue. When we come back, stay with us.